Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Maroon Friday edition of the Yard. Hope it's a payday for you weekly and bi-weekly wage earners. Maybe it is. Get out and go do some fun things. Maybe come to Dirty Noble Field. Last night did not go the way we wanted. I hate losing. I hate losing more than I love winning. I'm just going to be honest with you. I absolutely despise losing in anything. It just absolutely bothers me to no end. That understood, we got two more chances to win this series. We'll try to even it up tonight. We'll try to win it tomorrow. And then we'll have a Monday Boneyard and recap the weekend that was. But, a lot to talk about. We'll break down the game. I'm going to record this show in parts, which I typically do, because sometimes I have to get up and think and walk around. That's one of the reasons I don't do a video feed. People have asked, but sometimes I got to take the dogs out. Sometimes I got to feed the dogs. Sometimes people call. And so it's not an uninterrupted 90 minutes. But nevertheless, I appreciate you guys sharing your day with me, at least part of your day. Hope that we bring some value to your Mississippi State fan experience. So we're going to record the game recap. We'll take a break. We'll go see Jeff Levy, and then I'll come back. We'll do top 10 lists. We'll talk about what Jeff Levy had to say. We'll preview the rest of the weekend and just see kind of what else happened around the Southeastern Conference last night. Pretty wild night. Some lopsided scores, but it looked like ours was headed that way too, in the wrong direction. Bulldogs proved they had some fight in them and just couldn't quite pull it off. Got the winning run to the plate there in the ninth and just could not get that one final big hit. But we'll break it all down. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. As noted on this show before, they are making some changes to the menu. Some new items available for your pleasure, shall we say. I've had the Black Label Smash, which is great. And now I have to have that Triple Smash. That's the next item on my wish list. You know, I don't have that Amazon wish list. Maybe I should. But I'm eager to get back in there and get that and enjoy Bulldog Burger Company. It's an institution now. I remember when they first opened, Hey Dad and I both went together and just said, you know, this place is going to make it. Yeah, it's going to make it. And it has. And it's thrived. And now there's three great locations to serve you. University Drive here in Star Vegas. Gloucester Street there in Tupelo. Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They will make you and everybody around you better looking. And maybe if you're already feeling great and looking great, maybe switch it up and have those chili cheese fries. They're outstanding. I added some jalapenos to mine because I like a little spice. That's just me. Maybe you're a little more delicate. That's up to you. And get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, we're going to be very honest about the game. We're going to be very honest about our performance. It was not a good performance. It's a moral victory that we came back and made it interesting. But we dug ourselves a big hole. Give Georgia some credit early on. But we were co-conspirators in our own demise, and that enabled them to get a big lead and dug us into a big hole that we couldn't dig ourselves out of. We'll start with Trey Phelps singling to right center off Charlie Foster, and then we walked Jackson. And I thought it was a competitive at bat, but I don't know, maybe Charlie was a little bit gassed up. Charlie, of course, is a former Georgia commitment. He's from the state of Georgia. Perhaps mentally that messed with him a little bit. You know, we didn't get the start we got last week. That's obvious. And that's kind of been the Charlie Foster experience so far. It's just, you know, one good outing followed by one that's just not so great. This is one that wasn't so great. Henry Allen flat out to center field, and then the double steal. And I felt like after the double steal, I was like, hey, they're being aggressive. We've got to respond. I thought Charlie responded well here because after the double steal, he gets the strikeout. Swinging. And so it's a non-productive out, and we have a chance to strand the runners there. And then what happens? We have a pass ball, right? And so that's not on Charlie. That's on Kevin Malewski. And so we basically gift them a run there. Then, you know, shortly after that, it's a line out to Ace Reese at third. I mean, how big is that? You know, you've got the crowd there. Everybody's ready to explode. You have a little early adversity. You have a chance to work out of it. And so the pass ball is not on Charlie. We got to catch the baseball. We got to catch the baseball. So that's one run. Charge to the battery. Bottom of first. We get going right out of the gate. We get a Aiden Teal gets down 0-2, works a 2-2, and then just kind of flares one over the glove of Phelps for a single. Ace tries to go oppo here, hits it pretty well, just not quite enough, and the wind was blowing out to left. It just didn't carry far enough to get out of the yard. And then Sully singles through the right side. Teal runs around and takes third. Runner was moving on the play, and so now all of a sudden, you get runners on the corners, and Stallman comes up, hits the ground ball to second, and then they toss it to the bag, and Sully goes directly to the bag, but it's kind of a pop-up slide. I know we didn't like it, and in the moment, I thought, hey, that's a bad call, right? But after looking at it without the emotion of the moment, I think it was the right call. I didn't like it because I'm a Mississippi State guy. But it was the right call. It ends up being an inning-ending double play. All right, 1-0 here. And then, you know, Charlie comes out and gets Hudson to fly out to right field. We're off and running. Then it's a single through the right side. And then we walk Branch. And so immediately we're kind of manufacturing some misery here. We go out and have a mound visit. And then we get a non-productive out. Ishikawa just pops it up. Frack catches it on the outfield grass. And so here we are, one pitch away from getting out of this. Very next pitch is a three-run bomb from Phelps to center field. Makes it 4-0. It's the only home run Georgia hit on the evening. And then Jackson goes down swinging. And so, but it's a 4-0 hole. And at this point, you know, Charlie hadn't pitched great. But, you know, I still go back to that pass ball. So you make a couple mistakes there. Catcher drops the ball, and then we groove a fastball, and it gets jacked. It's 4-0, and you just start feeling like, hey, there's a lot of ball game left, but we got to get on the board here. Well, we do. Garrett Fry gets down in the count 0-2, and then on a 1-2 pitch, he hits a high towering fly ball into the right field seats to make it 4-1. So now, hey, we're off and running. We're in the game. Woodson goes down swinging. Parker then singles back up the middle. Maluski, chopper to third base. They force a runner at second, and there's a little contact there. And listen, the game of baseball is played by men, okay? And there's a lot of this with Georgia, and I thought maybe Mississippi State was kind of sending a message a little bit. You had the hard slide from Sullivan and now kind of a hard slide from Parker. And it's like, you know, we're here to play a ball game, okay? We're not just going to sit back. And so I felt like there was maybe an intended message here. Chancing grounds out to short. So inning's over. All right, top of third. Henry Allen doubles down the left field line, and we just catch too much of the plate there. It's an 0-2 count, and he swung well over that second pitch. But on 0-2, we can't be that close to the plate. Give Allen a lot of credit, former Diamond Dog. He doubles down the left field line. So automatically, they already have a runner in scoring position with nobody out. We bring in Tyler Pitzer. He gets Callaway to strike out, and then guess what happens? There's another pass ball, and Allen takes third. And then Lujo flies out to left field. RBI sack fly. All right, so again, the battery is instrumental in giving them another run. That's two. Then Hudson walks, and this is a count two. We're up 1-2. And then O'Shaughnessy strikes out swinging. So we get out of it just giving up a run. But again, so much of this, you know, the nuance of baseball. On an 0-2 count, early in ball games, you can't be that close to the plate, and you got to catch the baseball. You have to catch the baseball. You have to catch the baseball. And so because of the fact we gift them a base, that sets up the RBI sack fly. Now it's 5-1. All these runs matter. And I think O'Connor said it well last night. You never know which run's going to cost you the ballgame. All right, so we get a little something going here. Should have been a bigger inning. Teal grounds out to second, and then Reese flares one into center. Sullivan then doubles to left center. We hold Reese at third. Stallman, who is really struggling in RBI situations here as of late, strikes out swinging. Fry is then hit by the pitch to load the bases. They walk Ryder Woodson to force in a run. Now it's 5-2. We have a chance right here to really climb back into this game. And Jacob Parker, who's going to be the face of this program the next couple of years, strikes out looking. We just got caught guessing there. And you got to at least make an attempt there, right? I mean, that's my philosophy on that. And listen, it's different at different levels of baseball. But you can't sit there and take that ball. You can't. You just can't. So, again, we kind of creep back in it, and you start thinking, we just got to get a hold somewhere. We got to get a clean inning. We're just down three. We got six innings left to play. Well, we get Branch to strike out looking, and then Ashikawa. And we got to stop shifting against this guy. He had three hits last night, all of them to the left side. This one happens to be a ground rule double. So now, again, they've got a runner in scoring position with left and two outs. Well, Phelps grounds out the second, but it moves the runner. And so, again, we're a pitch away from getting out of this with no damage done. And then there's a wild pitch. Now, I'm not going to sit here and criticize catcher again. However, the battery's got to complete this. You can't throw a wild pitch with a runner at third. And run scores makes it 6-2. We get Jackson to strike out looking to end the frame. So here we are, down four, head of the bottom of the four. Three of the four runs that provide the lead for Georgia come basically because we couldn't pitch it and catch it, right? I mean, let's just kind of call it for what it is. And so we've dug a hole, give them some credit for applying pressure, but three of those runs are on us. They're on us. And that's kind of been synonymous with the five losses that we have, is that we have not played clean baseball at times. When we do, we win ball games. When we don't, it becomes a dicey proposition. All right, we pull Belowski and bring in Raymond, and he flies out to left, and then Chance gets an infield single. Just a great play by Phelps just to knock it down. There just was no play to be made. And then Teal flies out to center. Reese flies out to left. All right, top of five. Again, you need a clean inning, and we didn't get one here. We bring in Gleason, who has been really good, but he wasn't last night. But he gets Henry Allen a strikeout swinging. They pinch hit Oriach for Callaway, and he singles to the shortstop. This is basically just kind of a cue job. We're shifted here, and just kind of an awkward swing. It worked out for him. Well, wild pitch. Sends him to second. Then we walk Lujo. Out for a mound visit. Then we hit Hudson to load the bases. So, again, manufactured misery here. It's not like they're knocking the ball around the yard. This is on us. And the good thing about that is you can fix that. Be one thing if you just weren't talented enough. We're talented enough. We just got to play cleaner baseball. O'Shaughnessy flies out to center field, run scores, 7-2. Then we walk Branch. We bring in Dane Burns. And then what do you know? Ashikawa doubles down the right field, or singles down the right field line. Two runs score, it's 9-2. And then Phelps singles to right field, great hitter, makes it 10-2. Jackson strikes out swinging. So at this point, we're thinking we're about to get mercy rolled in our own park. And as Jack Crystal said so famously, there was action in the aisles at Duty Noble Field. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Financial stress affects far more than our bank accounts. It can take a serious toll on our mental health and our relationships. With 88% of Americans feeling some form of financial stress at the start of 2026, money worries often bring anxiety, sleep disruption, and even depression. It's also one of the leading sources of conflict between couples. This month, we want to normalize the emotional weight of financial stress and remind people that struggling with money doesn't mean they're failing. Sometimes it's just about accessing the right kind of support. Guys, there have been times in my life my debit card's been declined. You get that bounce check notice in the mail. It can be extremely stressful, and you kind of look at your partner. We're always looking for somebody to blame. Listen, we can't get you financial help, but we can give you help when it comes to managing the financial stress of it all. When life feels overwhelming, therapy can help. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com/Boneyard. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/Boneyard. thing is, the Bulldogs in uniform didn't give up. Now, we didn't scratch anything across here in the fifth. Sullivan flies out to right. Stallman lines out to left. Then Fry gets a single back up the middle. And then there is the, fielder's choice here. And honestly, I thought that Fry beat it at second. And then when I saw the replay, you know, that Hawkeye thing, it was clear he was out. So fielder's choice ends the inning. And Georgia's got to be feeling really good right here. And you think State's maybe going to white flag this thing. We bring in Fowler, who pitched on Tuesday. I think we may have found something with him. And that was the thing. We were worried about the bullpen here a couple weeks ago. But now all of a sudden, Billingsley's stepping up. Bauer seems to be reborn. And now all of a sudden you introduce Fowler, who's been a little bit banged up. Well, he comes out and walks the first guy on four pitches. And we immediately go out there and talk to him. And then it's another walk. Well, we get a pop-up to the first baseman, and then we get a strikeout looking and a strikeout looking. So, again, we manufactured some misery, but we're able to navigate that without giving up another run. Bottom of sixth, they goes 1-2-3. They bring in Bird, who is one of their best bullpen arms, and so is Aoki. That's two of their best guys, and, of course, you're trying to nail down a Friday win. Bird was really good initially. Gets Parker to go down swinging on three pitches. Raymond flies out to left, and then Chance goes down swinging, which is a rarity. All right, top of seven. Again, we need a clean inning. Well, Fowler gives us one here. We get a fly out to center, and then it's a fielding error, right? It's so interesting. We throw him out, and it looked like he was safe in live action. They review it, and they give them the base, and of course it's an E5 against Ace, and Ace is in a little bit of a funk right now, offensively and defensively. There were two plays last night he should have made. He'll tell you the same. Phelps then walks. We bring in Jack Bauer. And what do you know? Freshman out there, they decide, hey, let's be a little silly here, and they're going to steal, but Bauer sees it, and rather than panic, he runs right at the runner, which that's a lesson to you young bucks. When you get the guy picked off, just run at him. Force him to make a decision. Don't just start throwing the baseball around. Don't let your emotions get the better of you. Just be an athlete, and that's what Jack Bauer does here. Then Jackson walks, and a lengthy at-bat there. We get in a full count, just couldn't get a call. And guys, it was terrible last night. I don't know what's happening to the SEC home plate officials. It was terrible, terrible last night. You guys have seen the videos. But that's not why we lost. And sure, that's a factor. But at the end of the day, that had nothing to do with two pass balls and a wild pitch and a runner at third and a couple of errors that we've made. That had nothing to do with officiating. Yes, it was a factor, but it was not the main factor. Henry Allen then reaches on a fielder's choice as we force a runner at second. So we get out of there. A little bit dramatic, but we get out of it. Bottom of the seventh, Aiden Teal takes a 1-0 pitch and just rifles it over the right field wall to make it 10-3. Well, then Reese walks. Sullivan goes down looking. I thought we had a bad call on the slider. I think it was on 2-1. Stallman then doubles to right center, which sends Ace to third. Now you get runners at second and third. You need Garrett Fry to put a ball in play here. He doesn't. He strikes out swinging on three pitches. However, Ryder Woodson comes through. Ground rule double, both runs score. Now it's 10-5, and you start thinking, you know, there's a lot of people that left that started coming back. And then Jacob Parker doubles down the right field line, just kind of trading places with Ryder Woodson, makes it a 10-6 ball game. Now you're thinking, dude, we got a real chance here. Wild pitch sends Parker to third, and then Raymond gets an infield single, and Parker scores. It's 10-7 with two innings left to play, and you're like, holy smokes, as bad as we have played, as bad as the home plate zone has been, here we are with an opportunity to just pull one out of the fire. Was hoping that Bryce would come through here. Not a great game for Bryce, but yeah, Bryce typically comes through in these situations. But anyway, he flies out to left center. All right, top of eight. They decide to pinch hit. We got Bauer still out there. Bring in Kornoski to pinch hit. And Jack gets him quickly. And then we have another E5. Should have been an out. And here's the thing that I would want to say about Jack Bauer here. He didn't let it rattle him, right? He didn't. Because sometimes you're going to have errors behind you. That's just the nature of baseball. You can't begin to think, I've got to get everybody out myself. Well, he gets Hudson to strike out swinging, and then O'Shaughnessy lines out to center field. And it's a great inning for Bauer. Bottom of the eighth. Need to get anything here. Well, we don't. They bring in Aoki, and then Teal strikes out swinging. Lengthy at bat there. Really needed to get him on base. Then Reese flies out. Sullivan flies out. So we go to the ninth. Branch pops up to the first baseman. And then Ishikawa, again against the shift, gets a single. Double play, 5-4-3. They review it, and yes, he was safe at first. He was. Phelps then reaches on a fielder's choice. We force the runner at second. Jackson and singles to the right side. Phelps goes to second. Wild pitch, moves everybody up. And that's it for Jack Bauer, basically. He walks Henry Allen to load the bases. And we bring in Chris Billingsley, who many of you were ready to move on from 2 weeks ago. Billingsley's body language on the mound is completely different right now than it was a month ago. Now, I'm not going to speak for the young man. I'm just going to share my opinion. I think that maybe in the beginning that Chris kind of wondered if he belonged here. I think now he knows he does. He's had three consecutive really good outings. Right, he had the start against Southern Miss that many of you were against. He started against Grambling. We bring him out limited, right, and bases loaded, right, because we've come back. You got to give us hope, and Chris does. He gets a strikeout swinging to end it. He was absolutely jacked, as was those in attendance. So here we go. Stallman walks. And good at bat there. Good at bat. Fried and singles to the right side. Now there's runners at first and second. So the tying run comes to the plate. Woodson goes down swinging on three pitches. And then Parker walks. Now the bases are loaded. The tying run is on base. The winning run is at the plate. Raymond tops the ball out to first. And he decides to go to second with it. Well, we make it. Right? We make it. Run scores. Now, the tying run is at second when he runs at first. Chance fouls out. Great play here by Phelps. We'll just kind of call it for what it is. Again, I really thought Bryce would come through here, and it ends up being an RBI. But great diving catch by Phelps. He gets up and throws home, but Fry tags and scores to make it 10-9. So now you've got the top of the order up. Base hit's going to tie the ball game. Home run will win it. Double in the gap might win it. And then we ground out to first. So in the end, we lose. And everybody's like, oh, we needed one more hit. Guys, it never boils down to one more hit, right? I mean, because you can go down to, hey, we get one more clean pitch. We don't throw an 0-2 count down the heart of the plate to open an inning. You know, we don't make an error here. Right, I mean, there's just so many things. We did not play good baseball last night and still almost came back to win the ballgame. Now, you got some momentum, right? You got some juice going into the night, and that helps a little bit. But you lost. At the end of the day, you lost. You play games, you win, you lose. And Bulldogs actually out-hit them 14-10. But everything matters in baseball. Everything. Every pitch matters. Every defensive play matters. It all matters. You know, if you walk it off in the ninth, you feel great, but you still didn't play well. And that's the thing that has really not been a big issue for State this year, but it has been consistent in every one of the five losses, every single one of them. We have given away runs. And that can't happen, not against good teams. Just can't do it. All right, looking inside the numbers here. Aiden Teal goes 2-for-6. Ace Reese 1-for-6. Scores a couple of runs. Also had a walk on the day. Noah Sullivan 2-for-5. Reed Stallman 1-for-4. Also had a walk there. Garrick Fry 3-for-4. Your hitting hero on the night. 3-for-4. Scored a couple of runs. Ryder Woodson goes 1-for-4 and has 3 RBI on the night. Also had the walk. Jacob Parker goes 2-for-4, and I do think he is your everyday right fielder. That's my feeling. Kevin Maluski goes 0-for-1 and gets pulled in the ballgame. We bring in Andrew Raymond. He goes 1-for-4 and also had a couple of RBI to go with it. Bryce Chance 1-for-4 in the ballgame. And again, some opportunities for Bryce to come through, but this is a team loss all the way around. And again, you know, we just keep doubling people to death, but one more double would have made the difference. But yeah, I just go back to if we just catch the baseball, there's three runs that don't score in this ballgame. Simple as that. Now, the flip side of it is, to find a silver lining, is in your Peyton Fowler. Now, he had some walks. He did. But Peyton Fowler's got some stuff. And let's run the pitching numbers here. Charlie Foster goes just two innings. I think you got to reevaluate everything next weekend. And I think that's the weekend coming off Thursday. If you want to keep Valenkis on Friday, you can. Keep Stone on Saturday, and then maybe you throw somebody else. Maybe it's Pitzer on Sunday. I don't know. And again, we don't have a timetable for McPherson, but you don't expect him to immediately return to the rotation. But I think you got to do something different next week. Pitzer goes two innings, strikes out four, has one walk, one hit, one run. Jack Gleason, again, Jack's been great for us this year. He wasn't last night. He'll tell you the same. Just kind of how things work. It's baseball. He goes two-thirds of an inning, allows four runs, two walks, strikeout, and a wild pitch. Dane Burns gives up a couple of hits but gets a strikeout. Peyton Fowler goes one and a third, had the three walks but also had two punch-outs, no hits, no runs. Jack Bauer, his best performance as a Bulldog, two and a third innings, two hits, two walks, two strikeouts, and will only get bigger and better. And then Bill Winsley, of course, the one big punch-out there to close it out. Joey Volchica gets the win, 6-0. Charlie charged with the loss. But again, battery operation issues, just that can't happen. That just simply cannot happen. You got to be able to pitch and catch. And listen, it's one thing if a ball is in the dirt and you get out there and block it up and it takes a tough hop on you. You can't allow balls to go off the mitt. We've done way too much of that this year. Way too much of that. And, you know, sometimes you have a wild pitch. That's the nature of baseball. Sometimes you spike a breaker. But when you get a ball that hits the mitt flush, you got to catch the baseball. And that's the thing, it just frustrates me so much. I mean, that's a basic tenet of baseball. You can't give gifts in the Southeastern Conference. And we did last night. Give Georgia credit. Again, they put a ton of pressure on us. They had 10 hits in the ballgame. But your Bulldog bullpen shut them out the last four innings. And that's the thing, you go back again and you think, hey, what if we can get a hold in the third or the fourth or the fifth? And it's a different game. So it always boils down to every pitch, not just a pitch. But I just think so much about you give teams life, right? We had the crowd rocking. Huge crowd last night. I expect an even bigger one tonight. And immediately you give Georgia hope, right? You gift them a run, and then they get a three-run bomb. It's 4-0, and then you've got a lot of people kind of sitting on their hands. Now, those that stayed were really engaged late, and that's an important aspect of it. Again, we got the best fans in college baseball, and I encourage you, those of you that were there last night, please come back. One of the things that we've talked about on the show and on our message board is that sometimes the crowd will get a pitcher on the ropes, and the pitcher will, like, throw over the first, and we'll stop. Last night, we didn't see that. Last night, the crowd kept it going. You can't give them any room to breathe. You can't. That's why they do it. They throw to first to get you guys to shut up. Well, don't listen to them. Don't work with them. Don't abide by their wishes. When you've got it rocking in there, and the fact that he throws over tells you it's bothering him. I'm not saying we got to yell obscenities, but keep your full throat going. Full chest, full throat, keep it rocking. And I thought last night that was part of the comeback, is when the team kind of showed some life, the crowd tried to will them along. And you guys became very much a hostile home field advantage for Mississippi State. So take some credit for that too, because it got into the heads of those pitchers. And speaking of those Georgia pitchers, you know, two of their best relievers threw last night. And you wonder if they're burned or if they can come back on Sunday. We certainly shouldn't expect to see them today. Justin Bird goes two innings, five hits, five runs, all earned, four strikeouts, one walk. And, of course, he had that one quick inning, and then Bulldogs kind of figured him out. He threw 30 pitches. Aoki got the save, threw 39. So, you know, he probably is burned for the weekend. Maybe he can get an inning on Sunday. I don't know. But, you know, it's tough to be as effective second time in a weekend when you've already thrown, you know, 30-plus pitches. It's difficult. So we'll get back out there. We'll get back out there tonight. 6 p.m. is your first pitch. It'll be Thomas Valenkis versus Dylan Vieg. I think his name. We already got our preview up. Dylan Vieg. So at this point, we're going to take our hiatus. I'm going to pause the show. We're going to go to campus. We're going to meet with Jeff Lebby. We'll come back. We'll do top 10. We'll talk about Lebby, and then we'll do some more college baseball. That's what we're going to do, and we'll see you guys in just a bit. All right, back with your player of the day, brought to you by Close with Blair. Blair Chandler, my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Blair knows how to get things done. Thus the name closewithblair.com. He can get you to the closing table when so many others can't. So make the dream of home ownership come true for you by employing Blair Chandler at 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Save that number in your phone as Mortgage Guy. You may forget the name, you won't forget the need. So whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, the only name to know in mortgage loan origination is Blair Chandler. Get his 25 years of expertise and know-how working for you. You'll be glad you did. Whether you're looking for that game day condo, which may be affordable than you think, or perhaps a refi to consolidate some debt or get some cash out, Blair can hold your hand the whole way through a very complicated process. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, a good thing, right? It's by request, Jennifer hit us up and said, Steve, I really liked the Saliva song that you shared the other day. I love the band Saliva. I didn't know they were still active. Well, here we are. Here we are. They are still active and still out touring, still producing new music, and just released a new single last month, if you were unaware. But yeah, they've had some changes, obviously. There are no original members left. Of course, Josie Scott, with the voice of Saliva, doing some solo stuff. There was some talk about reuniting, but hadn't worked out. Bobby Amoru has been the lead vocalist, really, for the last 15 years. Brad Stewart, you may remember him. He was the original bass player in Shinedown and on the Leave a Whisper album and the Us and Them album. Then he left. Eric Bass took over. Sammy Joe Bishop, great female drummer. Been with the band now for almost 4 years, and Josh Kulak, been with them now a couple years, and Sebastian Labar. Does that name sound familiar? It should. It should. Connected to Jeff Labar, played in Cinderella. Nevertheless, here we are. Cool band, still producing cool music. So, here we go. The latest top 10 from Saliva post Josie Scott. This is from the Bobby Amoru era. Number 10 is Time Bomb. Rockin' track. They've added a little more electronica to their music. You know, they've always had a little bit of, I don't know, new metal influence. You know, they kind of did some rap rock type stuff. So you can hear some of that in the tracks. Like, it's a little more rhythmic, I guess we could say. But Time Bomb, number 10. Number 9, a great track called How to Be Human. Not to be confused with Shinedown's, a symptom of being human, even though the bands are closely affiliated. Zach Myers, a guitar player from Shinedown, was a touring musician with Saliva for about 2 years as a bass player. Zach can play a little bit of everything. Number 8, Come Back Stronger. Now, this is one of those anthemic songs. We all go through some things in life. There are challenges. There are things that happen. There are adversities that come our way that some are our choosing, some aren't. You know, sometimes we do stupid stuff and we have consequences for their actions, but there are sometimes things that happen in your life you don't have any choice but to keep going. You just got to keep going. You learn from it, you move on. Number 7, one of my favorite tracks of the Bobby Amoru era. And you say, Steve, why is it 7? It's, well, some of the other stuff's a little more rocking. There are two versions of this song. There's the album version, and then there's the retold version. I like them both. But it's Devil's World. It's hard to find heaven in the devil's world. And there, it's one of those really kind of a tuned up, rocked up Southern ballad. That's probably the best way that I can describe it. It's more of a modernized version of maybe even like some Skinner type stuff. Great track. All right, number six, Only the Strong Survive, kind of going back to Coming Back Stronger. It's a really kind of a manifesto about just kind of living life, right? It's one of those things like you find out in life and in business that you got to have some gumption. You got to have some kick. You got to be willing to get out there and fight. There are a lot of people that are ready to lay down. I'm not one of those. And things happen. And you find a way to get stronger. If you don't, you fail. Number five, great track. And this is really kind of about a relationship. In some respects, the lyrical content kind of plays off like I Am the Highway from Audioslave. What I mean by that is it's like, and it's not very technical in that respect, but basically like Chris Cornell was telling us in I Am the Highway from Audioslave, that like he has a relationship, she's just kind of diminishing him. You know, I am not your rolling wheel, I am the highway, right? I'm a lot bigger deal than you think. This is Horizon, number five on your list today, Horizon. You know, as you see, that's where you'll see me, you know, good stuff. The first track from the very beginning of the Amaro era is In It to Win It. And there was an album called In It to Win It. It's not currently available on iTunes. I don't know what the licensing issue is there, but nevertheless, another one of those great tracks. If we're going to play, I want to win, right? There's no point in getting up and competing if I don't have a chance to win. Number three, we've had the retold version as part of the collaborations, but it's the original version of High on Me. And it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek track. It's basically about being a toxic relationship with an addict. That's essentially what it's about. And you've got somebody that loves you, but it seems like they're just kind of using you to further their own end. And that's really what the track is about. I like the retold version a little bit better, but I thought we'd show some love for the album version. Number two, a single released a couple years ago, Hit 'Em Where It Hurts. And there's a lot of this, you know, popular, anthemic, positive, self-empowerment type music in the new catalog. Like, I love the stuff with Josie. I do. I love Josie Scott. But I do like the fact that the band, in some respects, has kind of taken a turn to empower people and encourage people. Not as much party type stuff. There's a few things out there, but basically a lot of these tracks are just about you, kind of giving you a little bit of a theme song or whatever. And many of these songs could be added to your workout or your gym or your run playlist. But number one, I love this. I think we should actually play it at the Mississippi State sporting event. It's crazy, man. It's such a good rock song. I think it's the best song in the Saliva catalog in the Amaro era. And its crowd goes wild. Great track. I'm sure it's an opener for them. I haven't seen them in several years. I hope to. I'd like to get out this summer and go check them out. And, you know, we've had some connections with Sammy Joe a little bit. And I'd like to get out and meet her in person. But, you know, Saliva, great band. Great band. And, you know, a lot of you guys kind of grew up, you know, with Click Click Boom and Ladies and Gentlemen and all that good stuff. But, yeah, they're playing clubs again. So there's a good chance you can go and maybe have a beer with them. But a lot of cool stuff happening with the band. And just to kind of give you an idea of kind of what's out there. They're going to be playing in about 2 weeks doing a Texas run. They're going to be in Fort Worth, Texas at Tannehill's Tavern and Music Hall April 16th. And in San Antonio, for those of you out west, they're going to be at the Fiesta Oyster Bake the next day. And again, they make a run through Texas in the month of April, take a little time off. They'll be at Rockville and Daytona Beach in May, and then be at the Sonic Temple and Art Music Festival May 17th in Columbus, Ohio. And this summer, they'll make a run up in the Northwest. So be sure and check them out. We'll be checking dates. And once we settle on a date that we're going to go to and hang with Brad, and I'm going to bring my Shinedown stuff and have Brad sign it, we'll let you guys know. And maybe we can all meet up. You guys can drink a beer and I'll watch. Yeah, but nevertheless, really, I like this band, and I've really enjoyed the newer stuff too, because every time a band changes a singer, you know, the identity of the band changes, and you can tell that, like, some of the instrumentation is still true to the Saliva sound. A lot has changed. A lot of members have changed, but the institution itself kind of moves forward. And of course, if you love Shinedown, you know the contributions that Brad had. Brad has done so many great things with his career. And there are a lot of people out there, like, you know, bands kind of come and go, you know, kind of like websites. They come and go. And there are some people that just kind of find a way to continue to make it work. And Brad's one of those people. You know, Brad has spent some time with Fuel and was in Burn Season. As a matter of fact, Bobby Amaro was the drummer in Burn Season. Society Red is another band that Brad was involved in. And so I encourage you to check it out. And one of the things that you may not know is that he co-wrote the Puddle of Mud song Control. Right? By Puddle of Mud. Yeah, you know that song. I Can't Control You. It's great stuff. But anyway, Brad's still out there making a living in music. So get out, say hello, and enjoy some live music when you can. That's one of the better parts of living, is to get out and just kind of connect with the crowd. I love going to shows. I don't get to go as much. You know, the Mississippi State schedule is my schedule. And we spend a lot of time and effort going out and covering Mississippi State sports. But when I get a chance to go down to Biloxi or something, or head down to New Orleans, or over to Mobile or something, and sometimes head up to the Bancorp South and Tupelo Center, and be one with a crowd and just have a moment together. You know, maybe you snap a couple of pictures or you do a video of your favorite song. I don't sit there and keep my phone in my face. I'm there to see a band and really enjoy just kind of having a night out with people, celebrating life. Some of you guys may like country music, maybe you like rap, R&B, whatever. I encourage you to go out and support your favorite artists, because there will come a time when they can't tour anymore. And nobody's making money off selling records these days. They got to sell merch. They got to sell tickets. And they need you to come out there and have a demand for them. So I encourage you, if you love bands and love artists, get out and go see them play, because they depend on you and you're depending on them. You don't want them to stop making music. And there's a lot of bands out there these days that we grew up with that are considered classic rock, and they're not releasing new music as often. They're not having that eagerly anticipated album, but there will be some singles every now and again just to kind of keep them relevant. And I encourage you to download that too. Like, you know, one of my favorite bands, Tesla, man, they have new material all the time. You know, those guys are still performing, still doing a great job. They were in Philadelphia not too long ago, and people are like, dude, are you coming? Couldn't make it, you know. Mississippi State's got to come first, and that's what we do. And but music's a big part of my life, as it is yours as well, I'm sure. And so again, get out and support live music whenever you can. Next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, we love Campus Bookmart. And why? Well, they got stuff we want. They have the things we want, right? And that's more Mississippi State merch. When it's gift buying time in your life, don't overthink it. Don't try to get too cute. Go the simple, most direct, most effective way. Buy the Mississippi State fans in your life more Mississippi State merchandise. They'll be glad. They'll be very grateful that you know them so well. And those diploma frames, obviously, are going to be popular with graduation coming up sooner rather than later. You may want to be thinking about that. Buy the new MSU grad in your family that diploma frame. It is a timeless gift, and it is one that they'll probably never replace. So every time they look up at their diploma on the wall, they'll think of you and say, yeah, Grandpa got me that, or my favorite aunt or uncle got me that, and I remember that, right? And so those are the kind of timeless and thoughtful gifts that you could buy from Campus Bookmart. Now, if you can't make it to town to see their great selection of Mississippi State merch, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays, and that is BSR. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. All right, let's take a look around the Southeastern Conference last night. It was wild, man. It was a wild, wild, wild. We had a chance to take first in the league, and we can get it done. You know, we could be number one overall by ourselves. Instead, that's Georgia, because they beat us, and Texas lost. But some upsets last night. So let's kind of run them back here. kind of keep you guys abreast of kind of what's going on and who's doing what and what we can get excited about. Of course, most series in the Southeastern Conference got underway on Thursday. We'll have some others kind of get underway today. But looking back at last night's action, Ole Miss goes into Gainesville and beats Florida 6-4. Of course, Florida swept Arkansas at Arkansas last week, then lose to Jacksonville on Tuesday, and then lose to Ole Miss. And that's also helpful for Mississippi State. It is. Ole Miss takes game one 6-4. Florida got out early, and they started Rabe. They'll throw Elliott today. So they're in a great position to take the series. So you kind of throw off, not that Rabe is some bum or anything. He's one of the better relievers. He got the start. Hudson Calhoun got the win in relief. But Florida jumps up 1-0, and Florida gets Ole Miss gets 3 in the third. Then it's a 5-1 Ole Miss game in the fifth. They cut it to 5-3. Ole Miss answers with one in the top of six. And then Florida adds a run in the eighth to kind of keep it close. But 6-4 is the final. Kyle Jones goes 3-for-5 in a losing effort for Florida. Vanderbilt, another win that helps Mississippi State, even though we'll get Texas A&M at some point. We need Vanderbilt. Every time Vanderbilt wins is good for State because we have 3 wins over them. We have 3 wins over Ole Miss. But Vandy, really no trouble at all in this ball game. They get up 2-0, and then A&M with 1 in the second. Vandy with 3 to make it a 5-1 game. A&M answers with 1, but they just kind of kept tacking on. But in the middle innings, it gets a little complicated, right? A&M scores 3 in the bottom of 5, 3 in the bottom of 6. That matches Vandy's 3 in the top of 6. And so all of a sudden, it's a 9-8 ball game with 3 innings to play. So, you know, it's a 9-out fight. And Vandy wins it 14-8. 2 in the 8th, 3 in the 9th to put it away on the road at College Station, Texas. That's good for the RPI for them. Good for us. Texas goes to South Carolina. And, man, South Carolina jumped on these guys early. And then you think it's a fluke. It wasn't. 5 runs in the bottom of 2 makes it a 5-0 ball game. Texas answers with 1. Carolina answers right back. So it's 6-1 headed to the middle innings. Texas just couldn't spell them, man. And then the Gamecocks extend with 2 in the 6th and 1 in the 7th to win it 9-1. They limit Texas to just 6 hits. It's tough to win on the road in the SEC. Carolina now 15-16 overall. You know Georgia and Mississippi State, but how about Auburn? Man, is Arkansas struggling or what, right? Auburn, a team that has struggled to kind of score, kind of puts it together last night. And granted, Arkansas's got some good frontline pitching. But it's a scoreless ball game through 3. Both teams score running a fourth. So it's 4-4, and then in a fifth, Auburn explodes with 7 runs. Makes it 8-1 in the sixth. They tack on another and 8, another. Makes it a 10-1 ball game. They could mercy rule them, Arkansas with 1 in the ninth there. But Auburn pitching themselves out of trouble. Arkansas had 10 hits in the ballgame, but they lose it 10-2. Eric Guevara from Auburn goes 3-for-3, 2 RBI and a home run. And Andres Alvarez goes 6 innings to win it for Auburn. Ryder Helfrich, the catcher from Arkansas, was 3-for-3 with a solo home run. Alabama continues to play well. Maybe I've undervalued them. I still think they're middle of the road in the SEC. Some people think they're going to host. Well, it helps the cause when you go on the road and get a Friday night win. And Tyler Faye, that's 3 consecutive appearances where he's pitched exceptionally well. Alabama all over Oklahoma early. They put up 2 in the first. Oklahoma counters with 1 in the bottom half. And then it's a snowman in the second to make it a 10-1 ball game. And you think it's going to be a mercy rule game. Oklahoma kind of chips away. They get 3 in the fifth and then ultimately 3 in the ninth. It's a 10-4 game going to the ninth. But, of course, Alabama not going to get too deep in the bullpen, save some arms. So, again, good start to the weekend. Some wild stuff happening. Some games are already in progress now. Oklahoma up 4-1 in the fourth against Alabama. And that's a must-win game if you're Oklahoma. A&M up 3-0 on Vanderbilt in the second. Tonight, this evening, 4:30, LSU and Tennessee will get underway in Knoxville. It's going to be a fun series. Missouri and Kentucky will play. 5:30 is first pitch. That's their first game of the series. That's in Lexington. You like the Cats there. Ole Miss will look to take the series today on the road in Gainesville. And again, they got Elliott going today. You got the benefit of game one under your belt. And then you got your ace today, and then probably your strongest pitcher this year tomorrow. Setting up well for Ole Miss. Of course, Georgia and Mississippi State will get underway at 6. Auburn will look to take the series from Arkansas today. I don't know what to expect from Arkansas anymore. I mean, I told you guys before we went up there offensively, they weren't great. We knew Auburn pitching had the chance to be really, really good this year, and they proved it last night. Of course, everybody has a bad day every now and again, including your Bulldogs, which happened last night. All right, South Carolina has a chance to take the series from Texas today. You didn't think you'd hear that phrase when you got up yesterday morning. And Vanderbilt looking to take the series from Texas A&M. Of course, they're playing two today. So that series will go ahead and wrap up today. So, you know, we'll see what happens. A lot of people have said, Steve, why aren't we playing two? I wish I could delete the weather app off some of your phones. I really do. Because the rain and forecast for Starkville is expected late afternoon, early evening hours tomorrow. And if worst case, we can move up from 1 to 11 and get the game in. And, you know, not to mention, Duke Stone threw last Sunday. And so moving him up one day is difficult enough. Moving him up two, not great. Not great. But that's what the schedule looks like today. And looking at the standings right now, too, as I mentioned, Georgia now first place by themselves by a game. So if we win tonight, we'll pull even with them, and hopefully we can win on Sunday. A&M and Alabama right there with us at 7-3. And then there's Florida and Vandy at 6-4, Kentucky, Texas A&M, Auburn all right there around 500, LSU at 4-5, Oklahoma 4-6, Ole Miss 4-6, Arkansas 4-6, Tennessee 3-6, and there's South Carolina 2-8, Missouri 1-8. I think Missouri will be the first team to double-digit losses. I think that's the case. I think, you know, I guess it could be South Carolina. But both of those teams are going to have double-digit losses after the weekend. I fully, fully expect that. It's not a hot take. I think we all kind of see it the same way. But nevertheless, we need the Bulldogs to come out and play well tonight. I've already done the full pitching preview for Georgia today. And I think you guys are maybe somewhat aware. I'll give you a little bit of a quick preview. So Dylan Vieg is the starter. He began his career at Michigan, spent 2 years there, and he was very pedestrian. Got a lot of innings, but not a lot of success. A lot of walks, not a lot of success when it came to getting strikeouts. But he is basically a fastball slider guy. He typically works about 4 innings. He went 7 against Queens, but everything else has been 4 2/3 or less. Last Saturday, he lasted a third of an inning against South Carolina. They only get the one run. He had 4 walks in the inning, just could not harness that slider. He comes back on Sunday and throws 2 innings in relief, and it's 2 hits, 2 runs, 2 strikeouts, 2 walks. And so, again, they win both of those games because Georgia's offense was so prolific. But he has not been good over the course of the last 10 days. In SEC play, he has just kind of been okay. But, again, works about 4 to 5 innings. So we should have a chance to get into that bullpen. The main thing for us is we have got to lay off that slider. It's very, very good. It is the most prolific pitch he throws. Throws it with the greatest of conviction. It's somewhat negated with left-handers in the box, and lefties are hitting about 100 points higher against him. So we need our lefties. We need Ace Reese and Reed Stallman and Garrick Fry, of course, the switch hitter, Jacob Parker. We need those guys to carry us a little bit today. Honestly, I don't think Vieg is very good. But I think we're also a team, too, that we can come out at times and chase some balls and put ourselves in trouble. You know, offensively, we've been very good second, third time through the order. My hope is maybe he'll help us a little bit, but we need to come out there and jump on him early. And, again, looking at the film, he's just kind of an average SEC guy. You look at the numbers, but you also look at, you know, who he's played against this year. You know, Wright State, and that's the game they lost. They beat Samford. He was great against Samford. He goes four innings, scoreless innings. And then Oakland, again, a team that's awful. And then Queens, another team that's awful. And so when you begin to kind of break things down and look at you know what it's been like in conference, it's different for everybody. But it's one of those deals, too, where you kind of – people's – the length of their appearance sometimes goes down. And, like, looking at Vig here in SEC play, if I can get over there to it, things are a little bit different with him. The ERA is up almost 2 runs per game. He's made 4 appearances, 3 starts. He has no record against SEC teams. ERA is almost 5 at 4.91. He's pitched 11 SEC innings, allowed 6 earned runs on 9 hits. 12 strikeouts, 8 walks. Opponents hitting 205 against him, and he's plunked a couple. And so I expect us to win this game. Georgia has not announced their starter for Sunday. We know who our Saturday. We know who ours is going to be. I think a lot of it's going to depend on kind of who all they have to use today. But we got in the bullpen a little bit yesterday. We don't expect to see Aoki or Bird tonight. May see them tomorrow. It probably ends up being like a bullpen type game. Paul Farley is a guy they haven't used this week. We do expect to see him. He's appeared in every SEC weekend. So good chance we see him. Kenny Ashikawa is a guy that plays some outfield and pitches a little bit, pitched a little bit last week, but kind of serves as an opener. But we kind of ran through that pretty quickly. Matt Scott's another guy, too. It's been really good for them in SEC play. So I suspect we'll see Scott and Farley tonight. If not, one of them will likely start tomorrow. That's what I think anyway. And so we'll see how things kind of play out. But, you know, again, that's the best thing about baseball. You lose a game yesterday, chances are you got another game today. You go win today, you even a series up, and it's Saturday before Easter. Have the Easter egg hunt, all that good stuff. And you guys need to come be a part of everything this weekend. We expect big crowd tonight, big crowd tomorrow. We want you to come be a part of that as Mississippi State tries to take this series and ultimately first place in the Southeastern Conference standings through 4 weekends. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, especially as you bring a large group to town, and you should. Stark Vegas Clubhouse is incredible. It's so great that that's available to us right here in the Golden Triangle. 6 bedrooms, 2, soon to be 3 baths, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the great big back porch area, the fire pit area. It's wonderful. Plenty of parking, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. Very easy to get to, very easy to get out of, but plenty of peace and quiet. Man, you love that, don't you? It's kind of like our little kind of piece of heaven just kind of tucked away off 182. Maybe you're familiar, maybe you're not, but it's the old renovated country clubhouse out past the Highlands. You know the Highlands. You know how close it is, right? Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will auto-populate. You can peruse pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests. You'll also get some booking options. You can book through Airbnb, VRBO. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That gets you 10% off your stay. We've stayed there. I can tell you it is a wonderful facility. You owe it to yourself and the people you love the most to plan a trip soon. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right. I promised you a Jeff Levy update. We had him today. You can read the full transcript and see the video of that press conference for free over at jeanspage.com. I would encourage you to do so. Whether you're a member or not, it's available to you. It's interesting. I asked him, you know, Saturday he told us that defense won the day. He said today, quote, "I thought there was a lot more back and forth, some really good moments for both sides of the ball. I thought that was a good thing. We created some explosive plays offensively, which we needed, that we didn't connect on last week. At the same time, defensively down on the goal line, we got a couple of huge stops. It's good to see. That's what we're looking for, balance and back and forth. We're looking for great physicality, great effort and execution. I was proud of the guys' energy today, just continuing to play the next play when things weren't perfect." End of quote. I think that's a really good comment because, you know, hey, I think most of you guys feel like I do. You feel like we're going to score. You know, Jeff Lebby is one of those guys that gets a lot of snaps off. He's very innovative in what he does. But defense has been the issue. We need the defense to get the ball back for us on a more regular basis. And that's one of those things you look at. You know, the more reps you get, the more points you can post. And so it was probably a big thing that the defense won the first one. Well, now the offense has had some time to kind of regroup and practice, and so now it's a little more even. As a coach, you don't want either side of the ball to dominate. You want the defense to be able to challenge you, but you want the offense to be able to counterpunch. It appears they have. And so we've got about 2 weeks left of spring practice. We encourage you guys next Saturday, you can come see the Bulldog scrimmage. It's going to be in the morning. So plan ahead. Many of you will be spending the night in the area on Friday. So a chance to come see your first look at the 2026 Bulldogs next Saturday. Running back room, a bit of a surprise today. I think we all felt like Xavier Gayton was probably the heir apparent at the number two, but it appears there is a new contender. It's Colin Wilson. We spoke to him earlier this week, and here's what Levy had to say. Quote, Collins had a really good spring right now. I'm not ready to stamp it, but non-practice in, this guy's practicing the right way. He has matured immensely, has a really fun skill set, proud of who he's becoming. He has to continue to grow just being a young guy, and both freshmen have come in and worked their butt off. That's Cooper Crosby and J.J. Hill. They're both babies, but they're guys who love to play football and know what it's supposed to look like from a work ethic standpoint, and they come from great programs. That's been huge. And Brinston Williams has come back to us and added some depth to the room. We're happy to have him back. End of quote. It's interesting. He didn't mention Gayton. Somebody else pointed that out. I don't know what that means. You know, we'll ask. But you know what Fluff brings to the table, right? You know Fluff is the guy. But you've got to have some complimentary pieces around him. A healthy Fluff with a healthy Kamario Taylor will make this run game and offense go. Colin Wilson is a very small running back, but he has really transformed his body over the course of the last year. He looks like an SEC player, one of the fastest guys on the team. You get it out to him in space, and it's a foot race, and he's going to win that more times than not. One of the other questions we'll get to, offensive line. I think that's the biggest concern for all of us, right? You know, what's happening with the offensive line? We were concerned about that last year, as you guys know. We had some situations where we just didn't have any depth, and a guy like Albert Reese gets hurt, and like it wrecks the whole offense. Now, granted, Albert Reese is our best offensive lineman, but we should never be in a position where losing one guy wrecks the program. But that's how it felt. Right? I mean, Javon James at times had some good moments, other times not so much. Jimothy Lewis is another guy that had some moments, but both of those guys struggled for consistency. Here's what Levy had to say. I do like where our first five are. Blake, as in Blake Steen, has not been practicing the last couple of days, so trying to get him healed up for next Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday as we finish those next six practices. As we're set up now, it's where our first five and a couple of other guys are. From a development and retention standpoint, knowing that if they keep doing what they're doing, it will give us a chance to have some good depth. We have to keep coming. We have a lot of work to do, but the first five that walk out with ones, I feel good about it. I'm ready to feel great about it. End of quote. I think you guys feel the same way. But I think that's an encouraging quote. A lot of discussion about Miles McVay playing left tackle. We obviously have changed the look of this room really for the second straight year, but we had some pieces returning last year that we felt pretty good about. It just never really meshed or came together. You wonder how much of that is, you know, Phil Lotholt coming in, right? I mean, expectations change, you know, coaching styles change, there's just some philosophical changes that may take place. And so you wonder maybe if those returning guys maybe had some issue kind of picking up a change in technique, or perhaps a change in philosophy. You know, we moved Luke Work around a lot last year, too, and he was out early on. We expected him to be a real factor for us and proved that he wasn't. I still wish we would have kept him. Now he's at Missouri. you know, so we wish him the best. You know, we just got to move forward with what we have. But, again, from a physicality standpoint, we look like a different team. We took a step forward last year. This year, we look even better. This time last year, offensive line was a huge, huge concern. Albert Reese was pushing a cart around. Luke Work and Jimothy Lewis were the two biggest offensive linemen we had. There were other guys out there that were about 6 foot, 6'2". That's just not going to get it done. They didn't have the wingspan to get it done. We went to the spring portal, of course, and those guys didn't get the benefit of spring. And so you're kind of like getting them up to speed, and then you have an injury. Javon James, a guy that you didn't expect to play a lot last year, had to play a lot. It was out of necessity and really played before he was ready. So not to take anything away from him, but we were just not good on the offensive line. You guys saw the games too. It's not some big surprise. And it wasn't just in pass pro. We had some big moments in pass pro where we got our quarterback crushed and turned the football over, or we couldn't sustain a drive. But there were a lot of times, too, we could have stayed out of third and long if we'd had better run blocking. And moving guys around, you know, losing Blake Steen in game one against Southern Miss was huge. Albert Reese being down was huge. And so you just kind of work through those things. We had some guys that we brought in from the portal last year in December and in the spring that really did not provide a lot of benefit. So this team will go as far as this offensive line takes them. What I mean by that is I expect the defense to be good. I think the skill positions are all good. I think the tight end room is pretty good too. And then we got to figure this thing out on the offensive line. It doesn't matter how great your skill people are if you can't block for them. That's just how things are. That's just the reality of life, you know. So we'll keep pushing forward and see what we can come up with, you know. That's one of the biggest things about football is you got plenty of time to practice. You got plenty of time to put reps in. But it'll be here before we know it. You know, we're enjoying college baseball season now, but you and I both know there's going to be, you know, the dog days of summer. You know, hopefully we get an extended summer and play deep into Omaha. And then you really only have the month of July where you've got downtime. And then as soon as we get back from that, we've got the opportunity, of course, to get into summer camp, into preseason camp. But, yeah, I thought Lev was good today. I thought he may be a little bit better last Saturday, but he was good today. One of the interesting things, too, we talk a little about defense. You know, and again, I say it says a lot about Jeff Lebby to bring Zach Arnett back. Not many people would bring their predecessor back. Zach Arnett says a lot about him, that he's willing to humble himself and come back. And I can tell you, when I spoke to him first day of practice, he was so incredibly jacked to be back, walked over, shook my hand, hugged me. He wants to be back. This is not a scenario where he just needed a job. He had a job, but this is obviously the next step towards getting back to where he wants to be. And what better place to do it than here? Right, I mean, the first year he was here, he had South Carolina, LSU, and others trying to hire him away from Mike Leach, but we had signed him to an extension mid-year to put ourselves in a situation where we would have to be paid a substantial buyout if he left. Well, it didn't work out that way. But I asked Lebby, you know, how did he feel like the defense was progressing with Arnett? Lebby says, the physicality and effort, guys running to the football, has been really good. We are constantly rolling guys to find the best 11 and 16 to 22. That's been good for us. Whether you're a freshman, a transfer, or a guy who's been here for 3 years, they're all getting the defense for the first time at the same time. So you can evaluate guys on a similar playing field. We've had young guys, transfers, and returnees do good things. We're creating depth on that side of the ball, which is exciting, but we're nowhere close to these are our 11, which is a good thing from a competition standpoint, end of quote. I am not worried about the defense. I'm not. And as you guys recall, you know, we hired Coleman Hutzler. You know, my worry was, is he has never had to deal with Mississippi State caliber talent. And let's just kind of call it for what it is. We're not going to have the same level of talent in Alabama and Texas most years, right? That's not a hot take. That's just the reality of our situation. And so Coleman Hutzler, when he has been involved primarily with game planning and stuff, he has had the benefit of just kind of putting 4- and 5-star guys out there and letting those guys go make plays. We have to be a little bit different at Mississippi State. I think Zach Arnett is a great fit in that respect. We're a little scratch and dent. He's a little scratch and dent. We need a guy that embraces that sort of stuff. And it's interesting to hear the players talk about, you know, that they just get up to field, right? There's not as much thinking involved. It's more playing and being athletic and just kind of reacting, where you don't have to think, oh, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. You got to beat the man in front of you. And it's going to be interesting. You know, one of the things that I miss, and I mentioned this to some of the guys in the media. Do you remember NC State? What great game that was. And they had run all over South Florida, and everybody thought they were going to run all over us. And they would get that unbalanced line. And we ran a corner blitz from the short side of the field with Emmanuel Forbes on a big third down play. And Emmanuel absolutely destroyed the quarterback. And we have missed some of that. We have missed those plays in Davis-Wade Stadium specifically, where you all can see it transpiring and you can hear like the inhale of the crowd as you know something big is happening because you know the quarterback's about to get enveloped. We haven't had that. We really haven't had that since 2023, even though it was a bad year. And the personnel that we had in 23 is not comparable to what we have now. Feel good about the secondary. I'm eager to see where Braylon Womack fits. I think he plays as a true freshman, maybe as a rotation guy, and then we'll see what he can do. But we've improved that room dramatically, corner and safety. We'd love to have Jerron Manning back. But outside of that, I feel like we are in a great position from a defensive skill standpoint, that we're going to be able to handle some man coverage. And, of course, when the quarterback's got less time to survey the field, you don't have to cover as long. And that's one of the things that we struggled with a couple years ago. We couldn't get pressure on the quarterback, and we kept getting beat on these comeback routes when guys worked back to the quarterback. They're not going to have that luxury with Zach Arnett because we're going to be bringing pressure from everywhere. We're going to have a lot of different slants. We're going to bring a lot of different pressures. We're very exotic in what we do. So I think the worry right now is, and I know we're chronic worriers at Mississippi State. I understand that. I think the way you look at this is you begin to kind of break it down and say, okay, we should be defensively what we were under Leach. And again, I know that 23 season was terrible from an offensive standpoint, but defensively we're very good. And there were times we couldn't get off the field because we couldn't generate pressure with what we had. Because again, I think that 23 defense was probably the least talented that Arnett had. You didn't have the benefit of a huge influx of defensive players. And I think Zach Arnett has been humbled in some respects. He told me the other day he's glad to be home, right? Glad to be back. And he kind of shook his head and he said, man, we got a lot of work to do. Well, of course we do. But the thing that I love about Arnett and Brock is the fact that there is an intensity, and all that they really care about is getting the ball back for the offense. And I think Zach Arnett, when he came here the first time, obviously, you know, was thinking about the next step. And we felt like at some point he was going to be a head coach, so let's go ahead and do it because of unusual circumstances. We keep him here, we retain the roster, and maybe we take some lumps. But there were some people in administration that felt like, okay, Arnett's probably going to be here for 3 or 4 years, and then ultimately it didn't work out that way. And it was the right decision. And now Jeff Labby's here. And we're 2 years into this thing, and Arnett has come back. And so, I think Labby, having coached against Arnett, has a real respect. And I think Arnett, having coached against Labby, he has some respect of what those guys can do on offense. Perhaps it proves to be a good marriage. Perhaps it's a situation where some weird circumstances have kind of brought things back into alignment, and then we can go get some things done. So that's where it stands, and you know, we'll get a chance to see them. I think we'll see them one day next week before the scrimmage, but the scrimmage may be the only open practice that we have, which will be our most in-depth look at the team. You know, we get about 5 periods, you know, so it's about 20 minutes, but we don't get to see any team stuff. We'll get to see some team stuff at the scrimmage, and again, hope that you'll be a part of it. You know, you'll come out and enjoy that. And this team needs your support. It does. And what I mean by that is like, you know how raucous it can be at Davis-Wade Stadium. We've got a packed house and the cowbells clanging. Those guys need some positive reinforcement. Those guys need the opportunity, of course, to play in front of a packed house. When they go on the road, They're going to have to contend with a lot of hostile environments. We have to create one that is beneficial for them here at Davis-Wade Stadium. And again, I like Jeff Lebby. I am rooting for Jeff Lebby to make it. I am rooting for all of our players and all of our coaches, as long as they are representing you and me. That's an important aspect of this. You know, I cheer for the logo, but also, too, everybody that represents the logo has my full support. So let's flip over to baseball here one more time. A lot of people wondering, you know, what should we expect tonight? I truly believe that Mississippi State is going to win the baseball game. I told you guys I thought we'd take 2 of 3. I still believe that's the case. You know, you got one of the best left-handers and one of the best pitchers in the country going tonight, 6-0, 0.91 ERA in Tomas Valenkas. But what's interesting is, like, when I look at these, like, game twos for them in SEC play, it's been interesting. Again, you go back to the Wright State game that Vig pitched in. They lost. He pitched the back end of a doubleheader, but they lost the game. And, you know, we talked about the non-conference schedule for the most part was a joke. And but this is a legit Georgia team. They don't take anything away from them. But they beat up on some hapless opponents. I expect the Bulldogs to really respond. Looking back at that Tennessee start, the game two game against, I want to make sure I get this right. Yeah, Vig was the starter. And it was kind of like we talked about, right? So Aoki threw last night. They threw Farley. It's kind of a bridge between Vig. But in 4 2/3 of an inning against Tennessee, it was 2 runs on 4 hits, 5 strikeouts, no walks. He did have the 1 HBP. But, you know, getting him out of there in the 4th and 5th inning gives us an opportunity to kind of get in that bullpen. And that's always an important thing, too, because, you know, there's some guys that are really good in short stints. But you go back and you look, you know, Dylan Vig went 4 innings against Texas A&M. Threw 86 pitches. That's a lot of balls. That's a lot of sliders missing the zone. Matt Scott won the game in relief, another guy that we expect to see tonight. And that's a thing that I begin to think about. If you get Vig out early, you get Matt Scott done, and maybe Farley. And then tomorrow, it's like an all-hands-on-deck thing for them, right? It's like you win tonight, and you force them to use some guys and burn some arms, and then it kind of turns into a Sunday. I think I just don't think anybody's back of the bullpen arms are going to be able to beat Mississippi State on a Sunday. And that was the case against A&M. They got mercy ruled 18-5. And kind of looking to see how they pitched that game is always very interesting, too. They started Kenny Ashikawa, and maybe they start him tomorrow, too, but he basically served as an opener, but he gave up 5 runs on 5 hits. He started last week as an opener against South Carolina and didn't go nearly as long. Farley threw in that game, because he barely threw the game before, 2/3 of an inning, 3 hits, 4 runs. Zach Brown threw an inning, 3 hits, 4 runs. Brad Pruitt, 2 hits, 4 runs. And then Jordan Stevens comes in and gives up a hit and a run, or 2 hits and a run. And so I say that. That's why I think tonight, in many respects, decides this series in every aspect. And, again, those games with South Carolina were competitive. Georgia wins at 5-2 and 3-1. They get into the Sunday game, and again, it was a wild game. And Georgia kind of came back late against the South Carolina bullpen. It was a 6-3 ball game in the 4th and then 6-5 in the 5th. And then Georgia kind of takes charge there. They win it 9-7, but they gave up 13 hits. And State hit the baseball well last night. We had a couple of mistakes here and there and just couldn't finish innings. And so we get an opportunity tonight. We need to get a lead early, get the crowd involved, have them headed to the pen early. Looking to kind of burn some arms to kind of pave the way for an easier Sunday. No matter who they start, who they start on Saturday, we're going to have the better starter. And so I think Duke can probably get us 5 or 6. And it, depending on how we pitch it tonight, you know, we could be in a scenario where we've got more arms available. Of course, you still got Maddox Webb. We had some people kind of bring that up on the board about we went to so many pitchers, but not a lot of guys that we count on the weekend, like Jack Bauer. Is one that has just primarily been a midweek guy and a non-conference guy. So we used him to kind of eat up some innings last night. We'll see what happens. But we're in a great side bullpen-wise. Dane Burns could come back on Sunday. He didn't pitch so much last night. Maddox Webb hadn't thrown. Maddox Miller hadn't thrown. We've got plenty of arms available. Ben Davis hasn't thrown. So I just encourage you to come out this evening and let's go beat Georgia. Matter of fact, I'll be leaving in about an hour, headed to Duty Noble Field to kind of get ready for this ball game, kind of be prepared for every bit of it. But I always feel like when Valenkis is on the bump, we've got a chance. And let's be honest, I didn't think he had his best stuff last week, and we still were able to get a win as part of the three-game sweep against Ole Miss. And so, you know, bullet to my head, yeah, gun to my head, yeah, I'm taking the Bulldogs tonight. And I like us tomorrow, too. This is pretty much how I thought the game, the series would play out. I thought we would struggle a little bit. Nothing against Charlie, but I felt like I didn't think we'd be able to replicate last weekend's start, even though it was home. I just kind of felt up and down with the younger guy who's got some emotional attachment to Georgia. I think that would play a factor. It did, but it wasn't the only factor. Again, when a pitcher makes a good pitch and then we let the ball get away and give a run away, that's on everybody. But, of course, Ace made a couple of errors. We had a couple of situations where we took some bad swings. It's a team loss. It is. But I expect us to respond. It was the first home loss of the year, the first time we've heard that stupid Dave Matthews song this year. And, I mean, again, I never liked the song, but maybe I hate it even more because I equate it with Mississippi State losing a home baseball game. So I expect us to bounce back. I thought we got a bad zone last night. You've seen the videos making the rounds about O'Connor, who was very buttoned up, very emotional last night about and great job by Jackson, the catcher from Georgia, to frame up some pitches. He got an umpire that would work with him, and there were several pitches that were out of the zone that were kind of grabbed back in. He stole some strikes, and that's his job as a catcher. You can't fault him for any of that stuff. But I suspect that we'll see a very focused Mississippi State team come out tonight. And number one thing is we just got to lay off that slider. You know, he struggles to throw it in his zone. South Carolina was one of those teams, too. They just absolutely refused to yield and swing at that slider. And the next thing you know, he's out of the ballgame, and you're already in the pen. And so that's kind of where we have to be. It's not about today's game, even though today's game matters most. But if you win the game today the way you hope to, it kind of impacts the ability to win again tomorrow. It's about managing the full weekend. It's not just about a game. There's sometimes you go all in to win a game, but we're trying to win a series, and, of course, we hope to win a league title. But ultimately, the most important thing is to be a top-8 national seed and give us a chance to get to Omaha and compete for a national championship. Last night's game is not going to determine any of that. And, again, we talked about that earlier in the show. When we don't play clean – and we lose, we have nobody to blame but ourselves. It's one thing to get beat. It's another thing to lose. And that's what happened. We lost last night. Charlie grooves a fastball, gives up a three-run shot. Ace makes a couple mistakes defensively, causes a problem. Catcher has a couple pass balls that lead to runs, directly and indirectly. Those kinds of things just can't happen. And then what happened last night is it all came together. All the negatives happened at once. And the chances that happened are pretty slim because that's been the case before. We've made defensive errors and been able to overcome them. We've had pass balls before and been able to overcome them. We've had a bad start every now and again and been able to overcome it. But when all of it happens at once, you're going to lose. And the fact that we came back and had the winning run at the plate late says a lot about the strength and depth of this team. But we are not good enough to continue to overcome bad baseball. Really, not because anybody applying pressure, but because we do it to ourselves. So when you make a mistake in this league, you're going to pay for it. And so we have to bounce back. Play within ourselves. Just play clean. You play clean, you win today. You win today, you play clean, you're going to win tomorrow. And then you get into another week. And this is a big series for us also, RPI-wise, rankings-wise, postseason pecking order-wise. All of those things play into this too. And every game matters. I had a discussion just yesterday. We talk about how every game matters. And I said, yeah, you go back to 2024 when we lose to Central Arkansas at 11 in the morning. And that was the fourth quad four loss, I think, in the end, right? And then you end up having to go to Virginia instead of hosting, right? We could have hosted here and been paired up with Arkansas, who was fading, who lost to Kansas State. And we sure enough had pitching then. And you begin to think about, you win that game, you host. Arkansas loses, you're hosting Kansas State here in a super. You're going to Omaha, right? I mean, it's that simple. Every game matters. And when you look back at the totality of your season, typically it's not because somebody did you in, it's because you did you in, especially when you play at this level. It's one thing to be a G5 team or bottom of the SEC type team and you just don't have the talent. We have the talent. We just have to go play clean. Because when you've got talent and you don't play well, you're going to lose because everybody else in this league has talent, at least in the top half. You can't go out there and give away outs. You can't give away bases. You can't give away runs. We have to play clean baseball. If we're going to win a championship, that's a requirement. And you remember, we won it in 21. We were the best defensive team in Omaha, and we played that way throughout the entire week and ultimately won a national championship. You go back and you just think about how well Cam James played in Forsyth, Scotty DeBrule, Luke Hancock, right? We were so great defensively. And so we've got to kind of figure some things out. We think we've kind of figured some things out offensively, right? We've been one of the better offenses in the country. And we showed that last night. But again, I just kind of think to myself, where would we have been had we not gifted them some things? We'd have won the game. And I'll be looking to take the series today. But it is what it is. Yesterday is gone. We look ahead to a new day. If you hadn't done so, visit DutyNobleBook.com. You get signed copies of all my sports titles. Of course, that's Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dogpile, and The Dude, which is the newest one, along with the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. Again, you guys have made a run at this as of late and made that now the best-selling book as of late, and I appreciate that. Starting to get more questions about it. That's the book. I have gotten more questions about that book and comments about the book than anything else. More than Flim Flam, more than Dogpile, and I got a bunch for all of them. But that's the one. That's the one that people say, you know what, Steve, thanks for writing this. I had a question about this, or this passage really helped me. That's why you write books like that, is to help other people. Even though we never meet, I hope that you learn a little something from me. You know, that's one of the keys to recovery that I learned early on, is that if I can put some trust in other people's experiences and say, you know what, they tried it. I'm not smart enough to find an easier, softer way. Maybe I should just put some faith in what they've done and experience and say, I don't want to do it that way. That's the wrong way to go. That's kind of what When the Bottom Falls does for you. It shows you some of that, and it shows you some of the way you should do it. Come float with us at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. I think Dana's floating 20 today. I think that's right, 20. And that was before I was around lunchtime, so she may have added a couple more. If you're looking to float this weekend, maybe give her a call. 662-268-7601. I love floating. It's been one of the best things I've ever done for myself. And I do it regularly. I don't do it enough. Dana will tell you. She floats at least once a week. I try to get in there 2 to 3 times a month. But I love floating. I love being able to have some peace and quiet. And sometimes you forget what that's like until you get it. Because we sit in our phone, our beds, and we're on our phone, and TV's on, and even in times of rest, we're overstimulated. It's so nice to be able to go in there and let my mind rest. You deserve to do that too. We may be able to help you. We've helped many others. And come join us over at jeanspage.com and the greatest Mississippi State website that has ever existed. We have not been around for, you know, 30 years now for no reason. And we're not going anywhere either. Nobody ever needs to worry about that. I'm under contract for a long time. And as I told somebody the other day, I'll be the last to go, and I'll leave when I'm ready. And my current plan is to work until I'm 60. That's my current plan. And hopefully I'm in a good enough position financially at that point that I can retire. And maybe I'll just sell the website off and either go work at True Rest, or maybe I'll convince Dana to sell True Rest too, and we can finally retire and just spend some time together and go see our kids. But I can assure you, we're going to be around for several years to go, provided God says the same and my health holds out. Not that I'm unhealthy, or any, I guess by some respects, maybe I would be. But now we're going nowhere. And I thank so many of you for your support. I've had so many people over the years that have reached out to me. And one of the things that makes me really happy, there was a, I get emotional thinking about this. There was a guy that hit me up, an older gentleman, and his situation was terminal. And he told me, he goes, hey, I want you to cancel my account because I don't want my wife to have to figure this out
after I'm gone. And that's tough, right? I mean, it is. So I get a hold of 247. I'm like, hey, I want you to cancel his account because he's going to pass away, but I want you to comp him for 6 months. And so they agreed to do that. And so I hit him back up and I'm like, hey, listen, I don't want you to be without Gene's page and your Mississippi State coverage and your final days. We want to be with you in the end. And so we did that. And sadly, he did pass away. It's been a couple years ago now. And I don't know, it just means something to me to think that we added a little something in the end. And if nothing else, I showed that guy that I loved him and I appreciated him and I respected where he was in that stage of life. And I also respect the fact that he was thinking of his wife. That, hey, I don't want her to have to be stressed and trying to figure all this stuff out, so I'm getting my affairs in order. And I think that says a lot about love between a man and a woman, and between a husband and a wife. And so I share that with you because we love each and every one of you, whether you love us back. And we want you guys to have a great life and have a great weekend. And hopefully you're spending it with us this weekend at Duty Noble Field. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.